This week, my youngest daughter turned 5 years old, my little Annie. If you're wondering which one that is, that's the one who looks like me. She's the redheaded one. And, you know, how do you show your appreciation for a child on their birthday? I mean, how do you let your child know how much you love them and how much you want to celebrate them and how much you're just devoted to them? Well, here's what we did. We checked our little Annie out of school on Tuesday. Rebecca and I took a couple of days off work, and we loaded up the kids and the whole family, and we took a family trip to the Poconos. And while we were there, we celebrated little Annie's life. We celebrated who she is. We hugged her. We snuggled her. We sang to her. We ate pizza. We ate birthday cake. We gave her gifts. We spoke words of love and affirmation and blessing over her life. We partied and we celebrated in the way that a five-year-old loves to party and celebrate. We danced to Baby Shark. We did, you know, we did all the things, right? And as parents, Rebecca and I, my wife, we affirmed to our daughter our devotion and our love for her and our commitment to her. Because this is what we do for people that we love. We celebrate the people who have made our lives sweeter. Now, today, we are getting back into our study of the Gospel of John. If you remember, we started the Gospel of John last year in 2020 during Advent, and then we took a break this summer. We did Ephesians, we did Nehemiah, but now we're back in John, and this afternoon we find ourselves in John chapter 12. We're picking up where we left off. And John chapter 12 is the account of a party where a group of people whose lives have all been changed by Jesus are gathering together to celebrate who he is and to show their devotion to him. And in this passage, we see what genuine, heartfelt, true devotion to Jesus looks like. So let's look in verse 1. It says, 6 days before the Passover, so this is 1 week before Jesus' crucifixion, 6 days before the Passover. So we are within the week, we are within a week of Jesus' crucifixion. It says, Jesus therefore came to Bethany where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Remember this? This was chapter 11. This is right where we picked up. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead after he was dead for 4 days. This was a big deal. And now the crowds knew the fullest extent of who Jesus was and what his power was. If you remember, all throughout Jesus' ministry, he tries to downplay and hide his power. But when he raised Lazarus from the dead, it was on at that point. Everybody knew who Jesus was, and the authorities wanted him dead. The crowds wanted to worship him. Everybody wanted to know what Jesus was all about. And so that's the setup of this passage. Well, then verse 2 says, so they gave a dinner for Jesus there in Bethany. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at the table. Now, the account of this dinner party is also recorded in Mark's gospel and Matthew's gospel. In Mark's gospel, it tells us that this party took place at Simon the leper's house. Okay, so I'm assuming that Simon was once a leper. Jesus healed him. Now he's no longer a leper because people are hanging out together with him in his house. And so we can make that assumption probably safely. And so here's the guest list of this party. Lazarus, who Jesus raised from the dead. Simon the leper, who was once a leper and an outcast, who has now been healed, Martha and Mary, who are Lazarus' sisters, and we know that the 12 are there, the 12 disciples, and Jesus is there. Now, I want you to imagine for a moment what that dinner was like, what those conversations must have been like. I mean, imagine for a moment you're in heaven, and Lazarus, Simon the leper, Martha and Mary, and the disciples roll up. You're like, hey, can I just like be a fly on the wall? I want to hear what you guys have to say because you've seen some things. Lazarus is going, hey, you know, like lights out, you know, I was in a tomb and then all of a sudden the lights came back on and I'm walking out of the tomb all clothed in my mummy clothes and everybody's freaking out. I smelled bad and people went nuts when I rose from the dead. I heard Jesus's words come forth and I stood up and walked out of my grave and everybody's like, man, I was there. I saw that. It was awesome. That was amazing, Lazarus. And Simon the leper says, yeah, I was covered in just leprosy. I had to live in a leper colony. I was outside of the community. But then Jesus came, and I don't know, we don't have the story of Simon being healed, but the scales fell off my hands and my feet, and I became whole again. And then Martha and Mary, Martha's serving. That's what she does. But if you notice, this is different than the story in Luke 10. Remember, Jesus rebuked her in Luke 10 because she was serving with anxiety. She was anxious. She was nervous. She was running around, picking up everybody, making everybody uncomfortable. She doesn't do that here. Jesus, she's been transformed. She's still who she is. She serves. She's a servant. But she's serving without anxiety. She goes, Jesus has lifted my anxiety. And the disciples are going, man, I heard this sermon. It was on a mount. It was awesome. He healed. I saw him heal these people. He fed all these people. He did all these things. And so all these people are telling these stories. And this was a party where everybody was changed by Jesus. They were celebrating Jesus. They were devoted to Jesus. They were probably talking about Jesus. But in the midst of all of these stories, it's Mary of Bethany who stands out as the portrait, the model of what devotion to Jesus looks like. And there's so much we can learn from Mary of Bethany. It says right here in verse 3, it says, Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment or perfume. A pound, that's a lot, made from pure nard, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, why is this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. And Jesus said, leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me. See, I want to show you today that the actions of Mary of Bethany show us what a life devoted to Jesus looks like. And the first thing I want you to see from Mary's life is that a devoted life gives at great expense. It says in verse 3 that Mary brings an ointment made of pure nard to Jesus, a whole pound of it. Now, it actually would have been quite normal in those days for a host to anoint guests with perfume when they walked into the house. Think about it. I've been to Israel. I've been to Bethany. It's hot. It's very hot. It's a hot climate. And so people walking around, they don't have running water, showers. Most people didn't smell great. And they knew that. We can assume that. And when people walked into a house, they would put perfume on them so that it would make things smell a little bit better. But they would just dab a little bit on their foreheads. Or you see, and that was a normal custom for a host or a hostess to put a dab of perfume on a guest's head when they visited. This would have masked some of the smell. But what Mary does is not normal custom. Mary doesn't put a dab of ointment on Jesus' head. She pours it all out. And not only that, like, she doesn't use the Axe body spray. She uses the expensive stuff, like the best stuff. But she covers Jesus with this stuff. And the other gospels say that she covers his head and his hair. This gospel says she washes his feet with it. And this wasn't just any perfume. And she uses a whole pound of it, but it's not just that she uses a lot of it. It's that it was pure nard and it was in an alabaster box. Pure nard was very expensive. And because it was in a box, an alabaster box, it means it was probably an heirloom that had been passed down in her family. This was very valuable, not just monetarily, but probably valuable in her family. This was probably one of the few things she had in her life that was worth something. It was expensive. Judas said you could sell it for 300 denarii. That's about a year's worth of wages. And yet she comes in, she breaks the box, and she gives all of it to Jesus. That's what a devoted life looks like. She approached Jesus with complete, utter, and total devotion. And what that meant was that he had everything. Everything that was hers was his. Everything that she owned at the moment that Jesus needed it, she would offer it to him. There was no cost too great for her to give up to Jesus. That's what devotion looks like. Because, listen, when you're truly devoted to something, you will spend time, money, and energy, often in great amounts, toward that thing. Everybody's got something that they blow money on, you know? Like, everybody's got something that they waste money on. It's your hobbies, maybe it's food, maybe it's movies, maybe it's whatever. We all have something that we're willing to spend a little bit more for. You see, because when we're devoted to something, we'll give to something at great expense. And we don't even think of it as a sacrifice. I mean, if we love something, we'll give to it. I once spent an entire summer eating nothing but ramen noodles for breakfast for breakfast. And Taco Bell used to have these things for 79 cents called cheesy roll-ups. Do you know what those are? I spent an entire summer eating ramen for breakfast and cheesy roll-ups for lunch. And that same summer, I sold almost my entire guitar collection. Why? Because I was saving up to buy a ring for my wife, for what would be my wife. Now, you say, ramen and cheesy roll-ups all summer. Oh, it was I did it with joy. Because every day that my friends went, you know, to some other restaurant and spent 15 bucks on lunch and I spent 79 cents, I was like, I'm 15 bucks closer to buying that ring. I'm 15 bucks closer to putting a ring on that girl's finger. Because I cared for her. I loved her. It didn't feel like a sacrifice, but it was a huge sacrifice. I saw an Instagram post earlier this week, you know, on your Explore page. It kind of, I don't know why, but they give me a lot of like financial advice accounts on my Instagram page. And there was a Instagram post from this financial account kind of giving you wise financial advice, all this sort of stuff. And it stated that the average total cost of a trip to Walt Disney World for a family of four is $5,000. I think it's probably more than that, but $5,000 is what they said. And then this little meme said, if you invested that $5,000 instead of taking your family on a trip to Disney World, in 15 years, if you put it in, you know, an index fund or whatever, in 15 years, it'll be worth $20,000. Okay, I know how compound interest works. I have a 401k. I have Roth IRAs. I know about those things. But in the comments, people are like, Walt Disney World is the biggest waste of money. These parents are suckers. Blah, 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 blah. There are so many smarter ways to invest your money. But here's the thing. I've never met a parent who claims that a family vacation to Walt Disney World is a sound investment. You know that? Like, nobody gives $5,000 to Walt Disney World and says, you know what? This is going to have a great financial return on this investment. That's not why you take your family on expensive vacations. You don't go to Walt Disney World to turn $5,000 into $20,000. You go to Walt Disney World at great expense because you love your kids and you want them to have fun, right? Nobody goes to Florida to a theme park because it's the financially wise thing to do. They do it because they want to spend time with their kids. It's a devotion thing, not an investment thing. And if you're devoted to someone, you will incur great costs to bless them. And how much truer is this of our worship when it comes to Jesus? King David said in 2 Samuel 24, he said, I'm not going to give to the Lord that which costs me nothing. I won't give to the Lord anything that doesn't cost me anything. I want my worship to cost something, King David said. Jesus himself said on the Sermon on the Mount, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. I've loved how in the last year, our church, you know, we started a little over a year ago, we started something called an opportunity fund. After prayer, we're just kind of thinking, you know, we've been a portable church for years now, moving from venue to venue and renting space. And we're so grateful for First Free and all these places that have allowed us to rent. But we're just kind of at a time as a church where we're ready to have a permanent facility of our own. And a little over a year ago, we started something called an opportunity fund. And we started asking you guys to consider giving to that. And in a little over a year, our little church, like look around, our little church has cobbled together over $420,000. And you just, on the drop-down box, opportunity fund, you continue, we're not done yet, you can keep giving to it. But the best part of that is not $420,000. The best part of this is that as a deacon team, as a pastoral team, we just watching the church, seeing people, you, who are devoted to Jesus, and you are devoted to the mission of our church, giving extravagantly and generously and sacrificially. Some of you didn't go on the Walt Disney World vacation with your family so that you could give to the Opportunity Fund. That's a beautiful thing to see. To see devotion to Jesus in action. See, your generosity is as much a part of how you worship as how loud you sing and what kind of notes you take during the sermon and even how you take the bread and the cup during communion. You see, a life that is devoted to God is a generous life. A devoted follower of Jesus is a generous follower of Jesus, and Mary of Bethany demonstrated this for us. Second thing I want you to see from Mary's life is that a devoted life often looks foolish to the world. it can look foolish to follow Jesus. One of the themes that shows up all over the Bible, all over the Gospels in particular, is people breaking traditional societal norms in order to approach Jesus, even as other people scorned them while they were doing it. I love the story. You've got lepers walking toward Jesus through crowds of people. They were supposed to be isolated from society, and people would have said, "Get out of here. Don't come over here. Don't come near us." But you have lepers walking through crowds of people so that they can get to Jesus. You've got prostitutes who walk into crowded rooms and break up parties to come in and to lay at Jesus' feet. And then in this passage, you have Mary of Bethany breaking an heirloom box filled with shockingly expensive perfume and then letting her hair down to wipe Jesus' feet. And you know what happened when she did that? Everybody scoffed at her. In a room full of Jesus followers, she still got scoffed at. John tells us that Judas rebukes Mary. He says, "What are you doing, Mary? You could have sold all this perfume for so much money. You could have given it to the poor." And I love how John, this is years after Judas has died. This is years after Judas betrayed Jesus. John's still a little upset about it. And so John throws like a dig in there. And he's like, "Judas didn't care about the poor. He just wanted to steal the money for himself." But here's the thing. It wasn't just Judas. It's easy for us to kind of beat on Judas. But the other Gospels, Matthew and Mark's Gospel, tell us that it wasn't just Judas who gave Mary a hard time. Matthew 26, verse 8 says that when the disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, "Why this waste?" So when you kind of put all the Gospels together, the conclusion I come to is that Judas was probably the first one to speak up, but all the disciples agreed with him and jumped in rebuking her for wasting all of this money and all of this perfume. They said, "This is foolish. Why would you do this? Pouring out this perfume for Jesus, it's a waste. It's so impractical. It's so inefficient. There's so many more useful things you could have done with that perfume or with that money. What are you doing?" While she was worshiping, the others were judging her and questioning her decisions. You see, when you devote your life to following Jesus and when you devote yourself to obeying Jesus, even when it looks a little weird, there will be times when your decisions will look foolish to the world. And not only to the world, but your decisions in following Jesus will often look foolish to people closest to you. You will be misunderstood. You will be judged. That's okay. Because you're following Jesus. You're not following the opinions of the other people around you. There's a story in 2 Samuel 6 where King David is just overwhelmed by God's blessings. And he begins worshiping God. And he starts dancing. It says he danced before the Lord with all his might. Now, have you ever seen somebody at like a wedding reception dance with all their might? It's an impressive thing to see when somebody goes 100% on the dance floor. But that's what David was doing. He was going all out, dancing before the Lord, and a woman named Michal saw David through his window. And she approached David and she says, "Hey, you look foolish. You call this worship? Your behavior is unfitting for a king, and you have dishonored yourself. That is not worship." And David says, "I wasn't doing it for your approval. I was doing it for the Lord. And guess what? Now that you said something, I'm about to get even more undignified than this." And he says to Michal, he says, "So if you're offended, you can walk away because I'm worshiping." Listen, earlier today in this service, my daughters were sitting back in the corner and you heard them screaming as they were singing, way out of tune. I almost went back there and told them, "Guys, pipe down. You're being it." But then I thought of the passage I'm preaching and I thought, you know what? I'm not going to put out their little fire. I'm going to let them sing out of tune and as loud as they want to. Also, it was other people's daughters too, and I didn't want to have to get on somebody else's kids. But I thought, I was like, "What?" My initial thought was to tell my daughters to chill. Let them be undignified. Let them make fools of themselves. I think of Henry Nouwen. Henry Nouwen was a theologian and a best-selling author, and he had professorships at Yale and Harvard. Everybody wanted to publish Nouwen's books. He was a big deal. But later in his life, kind of in his prime of his publishing career and of his theology career and academic career, he sensed that God was calling him to a new work. And so he left Yale and he went to serve as a chaplain at a home for developmentally disabled adults, much like the guild which we serve here in the neighborhood. And he spent the rest of his ministry in obscurity, no longer teaching Ivy League students and hobnobbing with elite, impressive people. But he cooked dinner and he prayed for the mentally disabled people at this home. And people in his circle said, "Henry, what a waste, man. Why would you leave Yale at the prime of your career? Why would you do this?" But he wasn't doing it for their approval. He was doing it for the Lord, and God blessed his ministry in profound ways. And it's not just Mary of Bethany, and it's not just Henry Nouwen, and it's not just my little girl singing out of key in the back row. I know so many Christians who have made decisions that seem foolish to the world and to those around them. I had an old mentor who was a very wealthy business executive right here in New York City, and he left a high-paying job right here in New York City to go start a business in a foreign country because he knew that in that country there were millions of people who had never heard the name of Jesus. And so he left everything here and he took his skills over to a foreign country and started a new business so that he could employ people. And while he employed people, he told them about Jesus who could save them and deliver them. And he left it all. I know of countless numbers of Christian families who have paid enormous expense to adopt orphans, often the ones with severe disabilities, the one on waiting lists that no one else wants to take into their homes, children with disabilities, children with HIV. I know countless Christians who have adopted these children into their homes. I think of a guy I knew who took up a second job, worked a night job so that he could send his daughters to a Christian school because he felt that that was where God was telling him to send his daughters. And it doesn't just have to be grandiose things like these things I just mentioned. You know, just being faithful to the way of Jesus in this world today can look a little weird, and that's okay. Just being faithful to Jesus, obeying his commands, living faithful to the things he taught us in your dating life, with your finances, with your time, in your marriage, with your children. If you are faithful to Jesus, there will be times when even simple faithfulness to Jesus looks weird to the world, and that's okay. God uses the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. Mary of Bethany, this is a devoted life. She gave a costly gift, and she risked looking foolish to those around her. And the question is, why? Why would she do those things? Well, in one sense, because she saw her brother raised from the dead, and she's like, "Jesus raised my brother from the dead. I'll give him anything." She was fearless at this point. She's like, "Death can't do anything to me. He raised my brother from the dead." She doesn't care about the opinions of others, not even the disciples. She said the only opinion to her that mattered was the one of Jesus. But she did it. The reason she did these things was because she knew that Jesus was worthy of them. And she was devoted to him because she knew that he was first devoted to her. In other words, she loved him because he first loved her. You see, a devoted life is a response to a devoted God. Mary understood something that the disciples didn't quite understand yet. You see, she understood that Jesus was going to die. She understood that Jesus was going to give his life. You know, every time you see Mary of Bethany in the scriptures, she's always at Jesus' feet. And she's listening to his teaching, and she's paying attention. And if you've read the Gospels, you know that Jesus doesn't keep it a secret that he's going to die. He talks about the cross all the time. But every time the disciples hear him talking about the cross, they plug their ears. They tend to ignore him, or they try to change the subject. Or Peter, God bless him, I love Peter. He's like, "Jesus, I'll never let anybody kill you. Like, it's never going to happen." Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan. I still got to go die." But the disciples, Jesus would start talking about his death, and they would immediately try to change the subject, or they would plug their ears and be like, "We don't even want to think about that." But Mary paid attention. And she knew that he was going to die. And she received that, and she acted accordingly. And she poured out all of her ointment on him. And Jesus even says to his disciples, "Stop rebuking her. She has prepared me for my burial." You know that kind of perfume, pure nard? That was what they used to embalm dead bodies when they put them in the grave. Perfume like that was used to embalm a body. And I know that Mary, Jesus says so, was preparing Jesus for his death. One scholar even notes that the perfume was likely still on, because she poured so much of it on him, and he died only a week later. One scholar says that as he was hanging on the cross, you probably could still smell that perfume. When he went into the tomb, you could smell that perfume. She prepared him for his death because she believed him at his word that he was going to die for her. And she was, and as she was pouring out that perfume on his head and his feet, I wonder if she was thinking, you're going to die for me. You're going to die for me. And the least I can do for you is offer you everything I have. And to those in the room that day, Mary's devotion looked radical. It looked wasteful. It looked impractical. But to Mary, it was simply a logical response to the love that Jesus had shown and would show her on the cross. You guys know that song, Reckless Love? Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. When that song came out, there was a big theological debate in pastoral circles. This is what pastors talk about when we get together. And the theological debate was, should we sing that song? Because should we say that God's love is reckless? Because God is not reckless. Recklessness implies foolishness. Recklessness implies risk-taking. And theologians, some would say, God is not foolish, therefore God is not reckless, therefore we should not sing this song. Now, my opinion is, I think the debate is kind of silly. Because it shows how Christians, we're really bad at interpreting art. Taken literally, I agree that the song may pose some theological issues. But taken from the perspective, think about it, the song is written by a songwriter. From the perspective of a songwriter, someone watching God's love unfold for us in Jesus, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? How does Jesus demonstrate his love for us? While we were still sinners, he died for us. Who does that? To the outside world, that appears reckless and foolish. That God would become a man and suffer death at the hands of men, that looks like recklessness, and it looks like foolishness. But God, in his wisdom, used the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and it was through his death that we now live. Because what looked like recklessness to the crowds and what looked like recklessness to onlookers and what may even look like recklessness to us and what looks like foolishness to the people around Jesus, what looked impractical was actually the wisdom of God on display. God made him, who knew no sin, to become sin for us so that we might become the righteousness of God. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God that chases me down, fights till I'm found, and leaves the 99. I couldn't earn it. I don't deserve it. But still, you give yourself away. Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. Jesus loved Mary so much, and Jesus loves you and me so much that he had his life completely broken apart, like Mary's alabaster box. His love cost him everything he had, just like that perfume cost Mary everything she had. It cost him his body. It cost him his blood. It cost him his life. And his death looked foolish, but he was willing to appear foolish so that he could redeem his people. And when Mary poured out her perfume, it says the aroma spread from Jesus' body to the rest of the house. By blessing Jesus, she blessed everybody else as well. And in Jesus' death, he died on a cross, but then 3 days later, he rose from the dead. It is in Jesus' resurrection that just as perfume emanated from his body and filled the house, when Jesus steps out of the tomb, new life emanates from his body to the rest of the world. And now the scriptures say that our lives are now to be the aroma of Christ to the world. This is what Jesus has done for us. You see, Mary's devotion was not an effort to earn God's favor. She wasn't trying to be teacher's pet. She wasn't trying to be accepted. She wasn't trying to earn Jesus' love. She knew she already had it. And her devotion was a response to the love that Jesus had shown her. And this is true for you and me. We are a people who have been redeemed by the cross and the resurrection of Christ. And our lives of devotion then are to be a response to this. So we give at great expense and we do things that look foolish to the world because God has done those things for us. And I love how in Matthew and Mark's gospel, John doesn't say this, but Matthew and Mark both mention that Jesus spoke these words about Mary. He said, this is Matthew 26, he says, "And truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what Mary has done will be told in memory of her." G. Campbell Morgan, the theologian, says, "I would rather be a successor to Mary of Bethany than to the whole crowd of the apostles." See, Mary demonstrates a life that is devoted to Jesus, so much so that all the disciples that were in that room that scorned her, after Jesus' resurrection and after Pentecost and the Spirit poured out on them, they would go into all the world and preach the gospel. And Jesus says here to those guys, "Hey guys, while you're scorning her, keep in mind that for the next four decades, you're going to be talking about what she did today." And Matthew, Mark, Peter, Thomas, all of them went into all the world, and you better believe as they were talking about Jesus and what a devoted life looked like, they talked about Mary. They said, "There was this time I was at this party, and there was this woman who gave everything she had, and we thought she was crazy, but we were actually the crazy ones, and she showed us what a life looks like. And that's why we're here. That's why we've gotten on ships. That's why we took the gospel all over the world. That's why we're risking our lives, because that is what a life devoted to Jesus looks like." We honor Christ by honoring the sacrifice of Mary, by living our lives like her, by living out her example. There's that song by Isaac Watts, the old hymn. It says, "When I survey the wondrous cross." There's a line in that song. It says, "Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all." Let me pray for you, Crossroads. God, thank you for your grace and your mercy. What appears so foolish, what appeared so reckless, was the way in which you saved us. By your stripes we are healed. It is through your death that we live. It seemed crazy, but God, that is how devoted you are to your people. You gave everything so that you could redeem us. You were willing to look foolish and to be mocked and scorned and ridiculed before the world so that we could be made whole and brought into your kingdom. And so, God, we live our lives now as a response. We want to be like you. And Mary gives us an example of what it looks like to be like you. And that is to give at great expense to your kingdom, and to be willing to look foolish and silly to the world in our obedience to you. And so whatever that looks like for us, for whatever that looks like for me or for each individual in this room or watching online, what does a devoted life look like for us? God, would you show us? And would your Spirit, God, would you pour out your Spirit on us, and would he give us the strength to live out a life of devotion for you? And as we do that, God, I pray that more and more people in our neighborhood and in our city would see the worth, the surpassing worth of you, Jesus. And so we pray these things in your name. Amen.